I'm Susanna Mars. I'm from Artslandia, and I'm here to introduce Jeff Tyzik, your Pops conductor here at the beautiful Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall.
Hello.
It's a really fun opportunity, I think, for the community to get to know Jeff and to hear what inspires him, and then you'll have a chance also to ask some questions at the end, so think on that.
Maybe sooner than the end.
Really?
Maybe.
You'll ask questions in the beginning.
Maybe one third of the way through. We'll
good idea. We'll I like it. Yeah. So you're such an accomplished person as a musician, and I know you do so many things. Can you tell us a little bit about the other symphonies that you also conduct for?
Sure. On a regular basis, I work with Oregon, of course, the Dallas Symphony Orchestra, and the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about all three of those positions, I actually started conducting, before I was their principal Pops conductor, I actually started conducting each of those orchestras almost at the same time 15 years ago.
Oh.
So I came in just as a guest conductor for probably 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then each one of them within the same time period asked me to be their principal Pops conductor.
Mm-hmm.
So those are three orchestras I go to regularly. But the orchestra that I've been with the longest, I started with them in 1994, and it's the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, which performs in a theater a little bit like this, the Eastman Theater, which was built by George Eastman, 1923, and I walked into that building in 1969 as a freshman at the Eastman School of Music.
Oh, wow.
So I've been walking on that stage for 49 years. But I've been conducting the Rochester Philharmonic for 24 years, and we still like each other. And, you know, that's not, it's difficult. Conductors, you know, if you've been someplace 7 years or maybe 10 max, I mean, it's kind of unheard of. But 24 years, next year is my 25th season with them, so.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been an interesting role with them, that's for sure.
When I think about being a conductor, you know, you have so many musicians that you're communicating with in a concert. Then you have two concerts here. Then you go off to your next orchestra. But one of the symphony players said to me that they were so impressed with the fact that she is the wife of someone in the orchestra. And she said, I'm always so thrilled that he says, how is, so, you know, the kids and that, you really have a relationship with all these people.
Well, sure, I do. It's, you know, an orchestra is not made up of instruments. It's made up of people who play instruments.
Right.
And what makes each orchestra, I mean, you all four of those orchestras that I just named can play Beethoven 5, or they can play Star Wars, okay? either side of the fence there. And it's going to have, It'll sound like who wrote the piece, it'll sound like Beethoven, it'll sound like John Williams, but each orchestra is gonna have its character because just the way certain people will play the violin or the viola, their sound comes through and that they develop the character of that particular orchestra based on the people who play in the orchestra. And I have respect for all the musicians, and every place I go, you know, within 2 minutes, I know where I am because I know the sound of that group.
Hmm.
I mean, Detroit sounds different from Dallas, from Oregon, from Rochester. I mean, everybody has their own sort of a personality. And of course, the you know, the music director who does the lion's share of the music with an orchestra during the season, you know, here Carlos Kammer. In Dallas, it was Jaap van Zweden, who actually just left Dallas to go and be the new music director of the New York Philharmonic, Leonard Slatkin in Detroit, and Ward Stair, who's a very young conductor who's known more for opera. Each one of them puts their stamp on the orchestra. So that has an impact, but when I walk in the door, they know what I'm looking for. So for the few days I'm here, it becomes my orchestra.
What's your stamp?
Well, in other words, they know what I'm going to ask for. They know, you know, if we're playing, say, a jazz or swing concert, they know how I want it to sound or how I want it to feel.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, this music. I mean, I have the way that I work on it, and, you know, and they relate to that, and they give me what I'm looking for. So they sort of adopt my personality for the time that I'm here. Mm. But I try to do the same thing that, you know, Carlos Kalmer does. It just try to keep the playing up, keep the rhythmic concept right, keep everybody focused on dynamics. You know, all the fundamentals to make those things great and the precision. So we share that in common, but you know, he has a way that he likes to do music, and I have a way that I like to do music, mm-hmm. and the musicians adapt to it just like they do with any conductor who stands before them.
What do you think distinguishes Pops?
Well, I think the thing that's great about Pops is you will literally hear any kind of music that can possibly be played by a symphony orchestra mm-hmm. will be on the Pops. Mm-hmm. Whereas the classical concerts are a little bit more limiting, I think, in the sense that, you know, you're going to get a concerto, an overture, a symphony. Here, I know you guys are very adventurous, because I look at the program. But, you know, most orchestras fall into that kind of formula, because there's such great music. And of course, you know, there's new music that orchestras play as well. Well, there's like a whole other world of symphonic music out there, mm. whether it's Latin music or jazz or Broadway or film music or, I mean, you can just about name anything. Mm-hmm. And people have created arrangements or written specifically like tonight. I mean, these film composers, John Williams for tonight has written music, some of the greatest music of the 20th century. It's so melodic, it's so beautiful, it's so rhythmic. So there's all this music other than classical music, excuse me. Mm. And so why shouldn't we play all that?
Right, you know? Right.
Ellington wrote music for orchestra. Mm. And as a matter of fact, he kind of coined a phrase that what I believe is that there are only two kinds of music in the world, good and bad.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't
and
agree more.
We just play good music, whatever it is.
Right.
So I think just a wide variety that we can do on the Pops. And then, of course, you know, I have a chance to talk to the audience and, you know, tell them something about the music so that when they leave, they carry the spirit and the emotion of the music in their soul, mm. but maybe in their intellect, they walk away with some interesting information that they didn't know about. Like tonight, there'll be some things, I'm not gonna tell you what it is now, but you know, there's some interesting things about the pieces we're gonna play tonight, and it's always fun to tell the audience about those things that they may not know about, and it just makes it a little more interesting.
Oh yeah, it's fun. Then the next time you see the movie, you've got a story in your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
So next season, I know you have a swing concert with some live dancers.
Yeah, we're doing a concert called Swing is the Thing. And the interesting thing about it is, you know, when you think of swing, what do you think of? You think of like late 30s, 1940s. Mm-hmm. But in the 50s, the swing era was still happening in the 50s, even though rock and pop of the day was taking over. Hmm. So we're gonna show, the first half is all music from the 40s, mm-hmm. and the second half is all music from the 50s, and you're gonna see how the music still kept some of the elements of the 40s, from the 50s kept the music, some of the elements from the 40s, and the dance as well. You can see the evolution, so that makes it kind of an interesting concert to do that.
Oh, that's really yeah. fun, because you can see how the music evolves, how the dance evolves.
Right.
Oh, that's fantastic. What are some of the other...
Great concert we're going to do is Unforgettable. Oh. And music of Nat King Cole and Natalie Cole. Mm. And there's an artist actually from Vancouver, BC, a great friend of mine, Denzel Sinclair. He's a Juno Award winner. Juno is the Grammys of Canada. Mm. And he sings with Lincoln Center Jazz. Mm. He's a phenomenal guy. And he has an uncanny, his voice is an uncanny resemblance of Nat King Cole. Mm. And he's not fake, it's not fake. It's just, that's, I think he just listened over the years so much, it's incredible. Mm. So, it's incredible, you know. Anyway, oh geez, I'm sorry, saying. You know, and we're at the holiday time, we're gonna have a Disney program.
Oh, right.
With some visuals that. And mm-hmm. some great singers.
Mm-hmm. And then you told me a little bit about sci-fi?
Yeah, we're doing another, well, they're, throughout the year, there are specials where films will be projected and the orchestra will play to it, but mm-hmm. we're going to do another music-only film night. And you know, the great thing about tonight, too, is a lot of this music, which is so phenomenal, is kind of buried in the film sometime. You know, there's a lot of crashing going on and sound effects and
they should
dialogue,
turn those movies down.
You know, when you hear this music stand on its own, it's just magnificent. So mm-hmm. next year, we're going to do sci-fi music in a concert like we're doing tonight.
Wow.
So that's going to be really good.
Sounds scary.
Yeah, well, some of it is. But we're going to actually go back to one of the scores is from 1939, I think, and it was a movie. Anybody ever see the movie Things to Come with Raymond Massey? It was like one of the first science fiction movies ever. Phenomenal movie. And it predicted the future in many ways. You know, different kinds of, there was a moonshot, and it was actually a space capsule shot out of a cannon to go to the moon. But
isn't that how they do it?
Yeah, sort of. But anyway, the music was really phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, we'll show a really good, complete picture of sci-fi music.
One of the amazing things about you is I know you create a lot of your programs from scratch. Mm-hmm. And what inspires you? I mean, how do you keep track of all your ideas? I imagine you have lots and lots.
Well, I try to think about music that really interests me, mm-hmm. and then think about how it could make a worthy program. For instance, the tango program. Mm-hmm. We've done a few different tango programs here, and I just love that music, and you find the right dancers, and you find a guy like Pepe, you know, a great singer, and great orchestra, and that, it's just sensuous, romantic, beautiful music. Mm. Why shouldn't we be playing it? You know, and there aren't very many tango I don't know of any other ones, except I know Forever Tango was touring for a while. But,
I remember that.
But other than that, I mean, why shouldn't we bring that to the stage? So I'm always looking for things that are a little bit interesting, a little bit different, you know.
And I know you're a trumpeter. I don't know if everybody knows that.
I was.
Was.
Yeah, I put that horn. That horn away. That horn only comes out now to play "Happy Birthday" for my grandson.
Oh.
Yeah, I found that with all the writing I'm doing and conducting, and I didn't really have the time. If I'm not going to sound half as good as Jeff Work, I'm not going to play the horn. So
he's incredible.
Yeah. So after whatever, how many years I played that thing? Probably 55 years or something. It's. I look at it once in a while now.
Did any of your kids pursue a music career education, or your grandkids?
I have one daughter, mm-hmm. and she went to Eastman for opera, and also went to Boston University for opera, mm-hmm. and she had a bit of a career. And then she produced two grandchildren, mm-hmm. and was really not able to travel. It's pretty hard to be an opera singer and be a mom to
My mom was
toddlers.
An opera singer.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. Well, if you were a toddler, you wouldn't really know what I'm talking about.
No, but I was difficult. A lot of trouble to an opera singer.
So 6 years ago, last Tuesday, my then manager left the business, and my daughter came up to me. I happened to be with her. We live in different cities, but I happened to be visiting, and she came up and said, Dad, I could be your manager, and I want to be your manager.
Wow.
And she had helped me produce an opera pops, which was great. It's great music. And and I always thought someday she'd be a good manager for somebody. I didn't think it'd be me. So when your daughter says that, I had two thoughts. The first one was, this could be the most incredible thing in the world. The second one, how do you fire your daughter if it doesn't work out? But it turned out that in my entire career, she's been the most amazing manager ever. And she now manages about 14 other people, including Doc Severinsen.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Who's still playing at 90.
A Washingtonian.
Yeah. Yeah. And my grandson, who's going to be 5 in 2 weeks, has got perfect pitch.
Oh, my.
Sings. He's got a darling little voice, but I hope he doesn't go into music. So.
Oh. So
it's a tough business.
He's only 5?
He's only 5, yeah.
All right. I was going to ask you about, you know, how do you get your grandchild to practice piano or something, but he's not playing yet.
Yeah. My granddaughter took one lesson and said, this is not for me. She's done. That's fine.
I know. But does anyone else have children or grandchildren who are taking music lessons?
Yeah.
Encouraging them in that direction?
Yeah, well, they have to want to do it.
Right.
There's a point where you say, okay, you've said you'll do this, and I'm investing in it, so there's an obligation for you to go so far. But if they really don't want to do it, it really shouldn't force them.
Right.
I mean, they don't have to practice a lot, but even 5 minutes a day, they're going to figure out if they like it or they don't like it.
Right.
You know, but there's so many great things about music, because you get a sense of self-worth, because if you put something into it, you get something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You get to do something that in the world we all forget to do sometimes. When you're a musician, you have to really listen.
Yes.
You have to listen to the people you're playing with. So, I mean, when I go into schools, I talk about listening, and all of a sudden, young musicians. I mean, one morning I was many years ago. I was doing a little residence at this in the school district, and at 5:30 in the morning, I had to get up and drive to a school district because at 6:45 the elementary school band met. That's when they met. 6:45.
Oh boy.
So I walked in the room, and the teacher had this baton, and she started to hand it to me. I said, no. I was just kind of waking up. I said, no. And why don't you conduct them first? And they were playing a piece called Flute Loops.
Oh.
So I'm sitting there. They start to play this piece. It's out of tune. There's no balance. There's no rhythm. I mean, it sounds really bad. Really bad. And I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, I'm going to have to get up and say something. You know, she's going to hand me this baton in 90 seconds. What am I going to do? So I got up in front of the kids, and I said, you know, we're doing a good job here this morning. And I said, we're going to play it again. I just want you to do one thing. I want you to listen to the person next to you more than yourself. So you listen to her. You listen to her. You listen to her. You know, everyone, play your instrument, but listen to the person next to you more than yourself. Mm. I started the piece, it was perfectly in tune.
Mm.
The rhythm was good, the balance was good, and I actually saw light go off in their eyes. I mean, it was visual.
Oh.
It was unbelievable.
Right.
So that's the power of listening, and you have to learn to work together when you're in an ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many great things about music, like there are, you know, I mean, I was also a football player in high school,
mm-hmm.
and there were great things about that, but I didn't get the sense of the spirit and the beauty of art that in playing football.
Mm-hmm.
But I got the teamwork thing, and I got the dedication thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So these are important things for our kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we need to pay attention to that. Maybe we ought to take a few questions.
That sounds fantastic. Oh, my goodness, an arm shot up.
I'm just, you do such fantastic programs when you come and visit us and do Pops, and you find people from all over to match your ideas. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, where you find these people, how you go about fitting them into your programs?
I first had the idea to do a show years ago called Let's Dance, and I knew of these two swing dancers that had worked with Eric Kunzel and some people, so I got in touch with them, and then I said, you know, I want to do a concert that has swing dancing, has ballroom dancing, has tango dancing. And so they said, well, we know these ballroom dancers from Los Angeles, and then they knew these tango dancers from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a word of mouth thing. And then after, I mean, I've been doing this for 35 years, 40 years actually, and I know great musicians, so if I'm going to bring in, you know, some jazz musicians, although there's some phenomenal players here in Portland, and try to use them as well. It's just been kind of years and years in the business, but I keep getting introduced to new people, and when I do, I'm always thinking, how can we make an interesting evening out of this?
Right.
So these two Lindy dancers. Now we've created two other shows together because it was such a good experience.
Oh, that's great.
And the tango dancers and I have created two other shows. And then they introduced me to Hector Del Corto, the bandoneon player who was here. You guys may, if you've been to the tango concert, you remember Hector, who, by the way, won a Grammy 10 days ago. And now Hector and I are creating a show. So, it's like I always say, you take, there's a pond and it's totally quiet and it's just smooth and you throw out a rock and you never can tell where the waves end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I always think about it, just kind of pursuing the ideas. Anybody else?
I'll go out and give you the
okay.
Mic here.
Sure.
I believe I heard you speak about a sci-fi concert, maybe this coming summer.
No, next season.
Next season?
Yes.
It'll be in this series.
It's going to be like, you know, like we're doing tonight, John Williams. We're going to play music from different sci-fi films.
Good.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep, sure.
Another question?
Every concert hall has different acoustics, different sound. I was wondering which concert hall that you've conducted in is your most favorite for conducting, and also which one you've been in that's your most favorite as a patron to listen to music.
I don't get to listen very often because I'm usually on stage, And if I'm not on stage, most of the time I have to tell you the last thing I'm going to do is go to a concert. Because I'm on stage 140 days a year, so I might want to, So listening, I really can't tell you, but, you know, they all sound different. There are some that are have a nice, rich sound, like the hall in Detroit, for instance, that was built in 19 or something like that. It's amazing sounding hall. I really like the sound in here. I think the sound in here is beautiful. Back in Rochester, the Eastman Theater was not built as a concert hall, actually. It was built by George Eastman to show silent films. Mm-hmm. So instead of going kind of this way, it's very wide. And if you're the most expensive seats are the worst sound because there's nothing bouncing off the walls to the orchestra section. So they actually built boxes in to try to correct it. I've been in a few contemporary halls that sound really good. Dallas, I mean, that's Meyerson is known for that. And I play in some halls, I have to tell you, that don't sound that great and it's not fun. Mm-hmm. You know, some orchestras don't have a great hall. So it's you have to adjust everywhere you go. You have to get used to it. And there's one orchestra I work with, the Florida Orchestra. They play one night in Tampa, one night in St. Petersburg, and one night in Clearwater. Three different halls, 3 days in a row. We all walk in, and we don't even know where we are for the first 10 or 15 minutes because it sounds so different everywhere we go.
What do you like to do when you're not conducting in your leisure time?
This time of year, depending on what city I'm in, you know, I do like to walk and walk in the woods. I love to cook. You know, cooking's a hobby, so I'm always experimenting on Jill. You know, with something new and different. When I can in the summer, I do like to play golf. I'm not great, but I enjoy it. It's because for 5 hours you can't think about anything except this little white ball, you know, which is great. So it gets me away from what. There was a question up here before we take that one. Yes.
Okay. How did we come up with the idea to play the soundtracks to the movies?
Okay. Well, John Williams and a lot of other composers really feel like their story should not end when the movie's made. So Michael Giacchino, and if you look at, you go back and you look at Eric Korngold, Max Steiner, you know, Alfred Newman, all these incredible composers, their music belongs in a concert hall. And so John Williams was really the first one who worked with a publisher called Hal Leonard out of Milwaukee. They published mostly music for, you know, schools, colleges and high schools. But he worked with them to make his almost entire catalog available for orchestras to play. So he created an avalanche, really. Now Michael Giacchino and Hans Zimmer and all these guys are releasing their music because they realize it makes them really feel valuable to have their music played in a setting of a concert hall. So that's why we're the beneficiaries of that. Yeah.
You ready?
1 second.
Yeah.
There's it.
You
want to
hold on to it?
Just out of curiosity, what's your favorite piece on today's program?
This is not a stock answer. And I will say, truthfully, every one of them. Because they're all different, and for me, the fun part about tonight is you're going to get to see so many sides of John Williams that it's going to really make you really aware of how rounded a composer as he is. And I like everything. You know, of course, you know, you play Star Wars. Come on, you know, mm-hmm. You lift it off the ground there for a minute or two. But I feel the same way about E.T. But I like Devil's Dance from the Witches of Eastwick. But I like Jaws. I mean, I like them all. You know, mm-hmm. I really do. And that's why they're on stage. That's why I program them, because I like every single one of them. Yeah, you had a question, I'm sorry.
How far in advance do you come before the concert, and how much rehearsal do you do?
Yeah. Get this question a lot. We rehearse for a concert like this. Well let me break this down in a different way. So when the orchestra is performing a classical series week with Carlos Colomer or somebody like that, they have 4 2.5-hour rehearsals before their first performance. When we do pops, on a program like this, I have 2 2.5-hour rehearsals. So we rehearse Thursday morning, and then Thursday afternoon I get to walk around Portland. Then we rehearse Friday morning, and then Friday afternoon I get to walk around Portland, and then I get to walk around Portland all day Saturday, and we play Saturday night and Sunday. Sometimes we actually will do a concert on one rehearsal. Sometimes we have to do that. But generally, we get two rehearsals. I think we have time for, actually, they're going to kick us out of here in 3 minutes, so we have time for three questions.
I had a question. How do you coordinate the orchestra with the movie that's being shown? Because they can't see the movie behind the screen,
right.
Can they?
Well, the gentleman's asking, you know, when the orchestra plays live to a film, the conductor, we have a screen in front of us, and there's a lot of information on that screen. There are streamers, and there are punches, and sometimes we're wearing headphones with a click track in it. So we have all this, these mechanical devices which actually make conducting about 10 times harder than it needs to be. The orchestra follows the conductor, but we have something that we are, you know, we're almost a machine sometimes. I did Fantasia once, and I thought it was going to be an incredible experience, and it was incredibly the most difficult experience I've ever had. And the orchestra wasn't really happy doing it, because what they had done is Leopold Stokowski, who had done, you know, the early Fantasia pieces, he just conducted them any way he wanted to, and he was a bit erratic. They went in later and put the click track to his beat, which was all over the place. So you couldn't just play the music. I mean, you had to go with what was there to make all the hits and everything. It was a bit of a nightmare. But to answer your question, what I did, the first piece on the concert is Beethoven 5, the opening, that thing. So we played that. And then before we went on with the concert, I told the audience, now I'm going to want you to watch what I'm looking at. And we put my screen up on the big screen and did it again. And the audience could see what we were going to go through for the whole evening. It was pretty interesting. Two
last
more,
question,
and then we're done. Because
yeah.
We have to put on a concert. Yes, go ahead.
One of your arrangements, which I really, really like, is the combination of Bolero and the Little Drummer Boy. I have tried and tried and tried to purchase it.
Okay,
I cannot find
do.
It anywhere.
Here's what you do. This, you're going to be happy, I tell you this. You go to the Rochester Philharmonic website, which is rpo.org. Okay, just remember Rochester Philharmonic. Then you go to the gift store. And then when you click on gift store, it says items for sale. And then CDs come up. And the third CD down is a holiday CD. It's on that CD. And it's a whopping $5. So they're still there, because somebody else sent me an email and asked about it, and it's on that CD, and you can get it. RPO.org, gift shop, items for sale, holiday CD, and it even says Little Drummer Boy right there.
Last question?
Yeah.
Let's see, somebody up here? I'm not seeing. Yeah, right over there.
I got to take this question.
Matt, can you hand this over?
A personal question about trumpeting.
Yeah.
I play in a marching band called The Beat Goes On. We're mm-hmm. here in Portland. And I'm wondering, since my lip doesn't last as long as I would like it to, is there anything else to do besides just practicing more?
How much do you practice?
Oh, 20 to 30 minutes a day.
Yeah. You can't practice 20 or 30 minutes and then go out and play a gig for an hour. You know?
Well, I don't practice the day we play a gig.
No, but I'm saying you can't practice 20 or 30 minutes and then expect that you're going to last for an hour when you play a concert or a thing. You probably need to increase your practice time, and you have to be careful about what you practice. You need to do a lot of long tones, especially in the low register, quietly. You know, you need, and when you practice, make sure you take breaks. If you practice for 20 minutes, you should play 5 minutes, take 3 minutes off. Play 5 minutes, take 4 minutes off. You should try to extend to 45 minutes and do more long tones and what I'm talking about. And I bet it solves the problem. Next time we have a question and answer, you can tell me if I was right. Okay?
Thanks so much
well,
for joining
everybody.
Us tonight.
Enjoy your nice
yeah.
concert.
Have a
Thank
great
you.
Show.
Thank you.